This is number 0047, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0047. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File, you'll meet comic and actress Tiffany Haddish, a talented woman who's had a very tough upbringing.
I was in the foster care program, Department of Children's Services. Mr. Foster's my father, that's Uncle Sam, I guess. And I grew up in that. My mother was schizophrenic, and she was a little abusive. So we ended up being removed from her and placed in homes. And then eventually my grandma got custody of us. And we were, you know, a family, I guess.
Mickey Kimmel is the creator of the website neighborgoods.net, a site where neighbors can swap items. How did this site get started?
A couple years ago, I was getting ready to go to Thailand, and I needed a travel backpack. And I couldn't find one to borrow on such short notice, so I ended up buying one for about $200. And I knew I was only going to use it once. I realized that was true for a lot of stuff I own, that I ended up spending a lot of money on something that I really only needed access to for a limited amount of time. So I did some research, found out I am not alone in that. Americans actually spend $22 billion a year on self-storage space. So NeighborGoods is, you know, meant to solve that problem. It's a way for us to get more use out of the stuff we own and help everyone, you know, save a little bit of cash.
We'll have a visit with Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, as he shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. He's a big city guy who sees more trouble and danger with life in the burbs.
Crime rate is higher in the suburbs. Taxes are higher in the suburbs. There's all kinds of problems in the suburbs. And the latest problem in Westchester County, which is just north of New York City, is that in the last couple of weeks, there's been two attacks, which have nothing to do with each other, by two different coyotes attacking little kids in their own backyards. Now, luckily, neither kid was seriously, you know, injured and really ripped up. But as far as parents who were saying it's not a good idea to raise your kids in the city, I have a feeling a lot of the parents are keeping their kids indoors.
And we have lots and lots and lots of stuff, plus, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0047, is Yves Moquin, who is the technical director at Club Soda, one of the many venues here in Montreal that is part of the Jest for Laughs Festival, which is currently going on, my summer home away from home. Yves and I have worked together for almost 20 years as I toil away backstage at Jest for Laughs. As a matter of fact, that's where you'll meet Tiffany in a little bit. Thank you very much, Yves, for doing the slate on this edition of the Stuff File program. Let's get right to the stuff, shall we? We start off with a story from Georgia. Authorities have charged a 29-year-old man with aggravated assault and false imprisonment after they allege he held his mother hostage for, wait for it, failing to iron his clothes. Carroll County Sheriff's Office Sergeant Mark Griffith said the man remained in jail without bond. The unidentified woman was not harmed in the June 30th incident. Griffith said the man, who lives with his parents, wanted his mother to do some ironing because it was, quote, woman's work. When she refused, authorities allege he pulled out a gun and took his 51-year-old mother's keys and cell phones and refused to let her leave for at least 6 hours. She eventually escaped and went to the police station. Authorities were able to get the man out without incident. So he lives with his parents. Where's Dad in all of this? Yeah, together they raised a fine piece of work. That's all I'm saying. Meanwhile, in Gainesville, Florida, a man went to the police after getting robbed by a woman he intended to pay for sex, but refused when she flashed a smile full of bad teeth. The man told investigators he and the 25-year-old woman were negotiating a price until he noticed her dental issues. He told police that after he resisted, she snatched a checkbook containing $78 from his shirt pocket and fled. The man told authorities the woman did not realize that he tucked a wad of cash into her bra and that she got scared and ran away. The woman was arrested on a robbery charge. Gainesville police said it was unlikely the man would face misdemeanor charges for solicitation because he was the victim of a felony. To which I say, yeah, and? I don't see the connection here. He was soliciting, then he got robbed. He committed the first crime, she committed the second. Why is he not being charged? Meanwhile, on to Boulder, Colorado. A Colorado woman convicted of taping her boyfriend's dog to a refrigerator has been sentenced to 30 days in jail and 3 years probation. Yes, you heard right. Taping her boyfriend's dog to a refrigerator. 21-year-old Abby Toll was sentenced Friday after she was convicted of felony animal cruelty back in April. She could have faced up to 18 months in prison. Prosecutors say Toll used hair ties and packing tape to bind the snout and the legs of her boyfriend's 2-year-old Shiba Inu, the dog's name is Rex, then taped the dog upside down to the refrigerator. Police say Toll told them that she was getting back at her boyfriend, Brian Beck, for paying more attention to the dog than to her. Beck pleaded guilty to misdemeanor attempted animal cruelty and was given a 1-year deferred sentence. The dog has been adopted by another family. Okay, back up a second here. She taped the dog to the refrigerator and got 30 days. Could have gotten 1.5 years. He pleads guilty to misdemeanor attempted animal cruelty. Wait a minute. Didn't she tape the dog to the refrigerator? Why is he guilty of anything? The last two stories seem to be backwards as far as I'm concerned. Someone not being charged for something that they should be. In this case, somebody being charged for something that they shouldn't be. I don't know how this all works out. But anyway, there you go. Moving right along, Boston police arrested a man they allege tried to steal a Mercedes-Benz from a dealership by claiming he had a hand grenade. Police said the man showed up at Expressway Toyota and asked to test drive the car. Staff described the man as nervous and fidgety and insisted on accompanying him. When they got back, the man produced what appeared to be a grenade from his pants pocket and told the salesperson to, quote, get back or I'll blow this up. He fled when he heard staff calling police and was caught a short time later with a fake grenade. The suspect was ordered to undergo a 20-day mental health evaluation after pleading not guilty to attempted armed robbery at his arraignment. Okay, now in this case, I don't understand the psych evaluation. It was a fake grenade. If he had a real grenade, then I'd have to say he's crazy. He's smart enough to know you don't play with real grenades. He's just not smart enough to know you don't try to rob a car dealership with one. But there you go. Now, here's a story where it's definitely time for a psych evaluation. Our last story in this section of Stuff File News, I may add. In the space of about 30 minutes on a June morning, according to a Dayton Daily News report, Brian Horst, age 35, shoplifted several packages of meat and a jug of Mad Dog 2020 wine from a store, inexplicably rolled a stainless steel tank of carbon dioxide on wheels away from a restaurant, and disabled an ATM by pounding on it with a rock after several witnesses spotted him in conversation with the screen, apparently trying to reason with the machine or possibly with an imaginary employee inside. Okay, this is the guy that needs the psych evaluation. That's all I'm saying. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, okay? As many listeners to the old radio show know, in addition to being a radio host and television host and news anchor, I have also worked for about 20 years for Just for Laughs, the annual comedy festival that takes place here in Montreal. I've done many duties over the years, from producing and hosting shows, running venues, and also being the backstage voice for the festival both here in Montreal and as a recorded voice for their road shows in Chicago, Toronto, and the rest of the world. It's always a treat to work with the comedic talent that comes to town annually. Now, this year, one young lady is the only female on the bill for the Nasty Show. Her name is Tiffany Haddish, and she hails from the mean streets of South Central L.A. She's a very funny lady and a very beautiful woman, if I don't say so myself. Now, between shows, I had a chance to talk to her just outside Club Soda here in Montreal, one of the many Just for Laughs venues and the home of the Nasty Show. Here is that conversation now. There are quite a few women, of course, who do stand up. Mm-hmm. But if you don't mind my saying, they're not as good looking as you are. You know, I'm not to say that they're ugly stand-up women, but, you know, there's something about some women in stand-up, they're not usually as attractive as you are.
True. This is true. And it's funny because I just started realizing that I was attractive maybe about 5 or 6 years ago, because I was always that funny-looking weird kid in the corner that was getting made fun of. So when you say that, that makes me feel good inside, and I receive that and appreciate it with all gratitude and conceitedness. Thank you.
Now, you actually grew up in California, and if I'm not mistaken, you grew up in foster care?
Yeah, I was in the foster care program, Department of Children's Services. Mr. Foster's my father, that's Uncle Sam, I guess. And I grew up in that. My mother was schizophrenic, and she was a little abusive. So we ended up being removed from her and placed in homes, and then eventually my grandma got custody of us, and we were, you know, a family, I guess.
So who discovered the funny in you?
My social worker discovered the funny in me. I mean, everybody always used to say, oh, Tiffany, you funny, and I would do a lot of things to try to get attention, and I would get in a lot of trouble trying to get attention and in the course of making people laugh. And my social worker was like, oh, you think you funny? Oh, you think you somebody, girl? Well, I got something for you. You know what? This summer, you got two choices. You can either go to psychiatric therapy, or you can go to Laugh Factory Comedy Camp. And I was like, I'll take the comedy camp. And it molded me into who I am today.
One of the things a comic always has to do is find their voice. Now, you've been doing this for a little while. How did you go about finding your voice?
By just talking a lot and figuring out what works for me and what didn't work. And, you know, it's a lot of different things that work for me, because, like you said, I'm pretty, so I can get away with a lot. So, I like to be bad. So, yeah, nasty.
Well, getting to the double standard of men and women in comedy, you like to be bad, you say. And some people are put off by that. Some people in the business are put off by that. Mm-hmm. Did you have a difficult time starting when you said, you know, this is who I am, this is what I do, don't try and change my comedy?
Yeah, I did. I still have a hard time with it. And but the funny thing about it is, if you ask me to do an all-clean show, I have... It's very easy for me. Very easy. If you ask me to do a religious show, that's easy. If you ask me to do a show just for, you know, blind people, I can do that too. That's just still talking. Anyways, I could do anything. And it's very hard because people think, oh, you know, you're this and that's what you are. But I'm really a variety of things. So
many comics these days get into comedy and they have an ulterior motive, that motive being working their way perhaps maybe into acting, sitcoms, movies. What is your career path or career goal, or do you just like doing the stand-up?
I really love doing the stand-up. My agent's motive is to get me into TV and movies, and that's what my agent and my manager would love, because then they would make more money, obviously. I love the comedy, and originally I took it seriously to do as like a job, so that I could make my father proud. So when he eventually saw me, he could be like, wow, my daughter is a successful black woman and she doesn't have a bunch of kids and she's, you know, she's actually taking care of herself. Now that I know my father and he doesn't really care, he doesn't give a damn if I do comedy or not. Now I'm just doing it because it's I have to do it. It's my therapy.
Well, explain that a little bit. You say you were in foster care. You mentioned your dad, and I know that you didn't know who your dad was for a long period of time, or you didn't know where he was.
Yeah, I didn't know
where. You got into comedy before you were reacquainted with your dad?
Yeah, I got into comedy when I was like 16, and I kept doing it till I was 18, and I stopped because I ended up being homeless because Granny put me out because she wasn't getting paid for me. And so I had to figure out something to do that was going to make some real money. So I worked at the airlines for a while, and then... you know, then I started getting sick and depressed, and I ended up in a psychiatric therapist with a therapist, and she was like, you know, do what makes you happy, and comedy made me happy. And I thought, oh, if I do this good enough, my dad will see me and he'll be proud of me, You know, he'll see me on TV and he'll be proud. And he says he's proud, but he doesn't care what the hell I do. He's just happy that I'm a beautiful young woman that's not, you know, running around in the streets like a crackhead.
Now, you also work with kids and do some work in that relationship from based on your own background as well. Tell us some of the things you do with kids.
Yeah, I go to high schools and I put on comedy shows at schools that where there's like at-risk youth, where they're like, you know, fighting if there's a riot or something. I do a show called Chuckles, Not Knuckles, you know, because you can solve most everything through laughing. I mean, and most of the time the things that you get mad at, you'll be laughing at it later on. So I do that. Also, I do shows with Department of Children's Services, do their Christmas parties and things like that. I do youth mentoring programs at a place called Home Youth Center and mentor the kids and give them, you know, guidance and share my story with them and let them know, you know, just because you're in this rut, just because you feel this way now, doesn't mean you're going to feel like that 5 years from now, you know, and you can do better and just work towards the best in your habit.
And they probably respond to you because this is, you know what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah. I know what I'm talking about. I've been there. I can sit up there and talk to them for hours about anything they want to talk about because I've been there. I've done that. I've been abused. I've been all of that. Everything that's messed up has happened. Everything. I'm not going to cry.
Okay, well, let's talk about some of the good things that you've done. Let's talk a little bit about the acting. You have done some acting. You've been on shows like, That's So Raven, My Name is Earl, other shows like that. What has that experience been for you as opposed to doing your own stand-up, you know, doing somebody else's lines?
Yeah, saying someone else's words is cool. I mean, it was a great experience. I learned different ways of funny doing it. They've all been great experiences. I mean, I did a movie with Ice Cube and Mike Epps called Janky Promoters, and that was really fun working with Mike Epps and really fun working with Marcus Rayboy, the director, because he just let me be me, but he gave me a core to work from, and it just let me be myself, and that was great experience, man. It was so much fun doing that movie, and Meet the Spartans, working in that was a lot of fun, because they gave me, you know, what they wanted, and then they let me twist it and do what I wanted with it, which was great. So I love when I get to do that. And I mean, I worked in a Lifetime movie too as a drug addict, and it was a drama, and they made me stick to the script, and I love that too, because then that gave me structure, you know.
Well, how does the discipline and the structure of being an actress, either comedy or drama, how does that help your stand-up and your writing?
That structure and discipline from acting helps the stand-up so much, because it teaches me timing. It teaches me patience. You know, sometimes you just want to hurry up and tell the joke. Oh, I wrote this joke yesterday, and I want you guys to hear it. I'm like, la, 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 la. And then everybody's like, what the hell was she just saying? So you have to sometimes like, hey, I'm just taking my time on act this out. I'm gonna do what I learned in class yesterday in my acting class. You know, do what I learned on the set. And usually it like makes the joke so much better, because you're able to deliver not just a funny joke, but maybe a funny story. You're able to paint a picture better, you know.
Well, we have just about a minute, and there's so many things I'd like to talk to you about. But in the time we have left, can you tell us a story of how you met your husband?
Well, that's going to take more than a minute. But basically, I was on my way to a cruise on this plane, and I got on the plane in Atlanta, and my husband was already on the plane. I didn't see him, but he saw me, and he says that he was like, wow, she's so beautiful, and she has so much self-esteem and confidence. She must be a flight attendant or something. But I wasn't at the time. I was just a customer service agent. But I sat down on the plane, I got off the plane and was at the baggage carousel waiting for my bag, and he was waiting for his bags, and he sees his bags. He gets his bag. He sees that I haven't gotten my bag, so he puts his bag back on the carousel and comes back and stands next to me and starts talking to me. And we talk until I get my bag, and he's like, where are you going? What are you doing out here in Miami? Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, oh, I'm going on this cruise. Oh, what cruise are you going on? Oh, I'm going on a Carnival cruise. Oh, me too. I'm going on a cruise too. And everywhere I was on that boat, man, he was following me around. And it was so funny, because I was on the boat with my auntie and my ex-boyfriend. Now he's my ex-boyfriend, but he was my boyfriend. And, you know, he was following me around the boat, and my boyfriend's like, "Why? Who's this guy following you?" And blah, blah, blah. Like, they almost got in a fight because I had invited my husband. Now I invited him to the talent show. I said, "I'm gonna be in this talent show. You should come and check it out. I'm gonna be singing James Brown's Sex Machine. So I want you to throw your boxers at me." He's like, "Oh yeah, I'm gonna throw something at you. And during the show, I'm performing, and my boyfriend comes up to the stage and puts a jacket around my shoulders like I'm James Brown, and my husband comes up and throws his room key at me, like hands me his room key. And then my boyfriend pushes him out the way. Hey, no, that's my woman. What you doing? You know? And I was like, calm down. Bring it down a level, you know, trying to separate him. And then it was cool. And after that, we exchanged numbers. He told me he was a police officer. And I'm like, wow, that's great. You know, so it's good to have a police officer friend. And so we exchanged numbers. We talked on the phone for about a year or so. And then I moved and I changed my number and I didn't bother to tell him. And he was trying to find me, but he couldn't find me because he didn't know how to spell my name right. He was spelling it H-A-T-T instead of H-A-D-D. And then he had broke up with his girlfriend years later. This is like maybe 7 years later. He broke up with his girlfriend and he's laying in the bed and he's like flipping through the channels. And he sees me on TV. He sees me and I come out and I'm like, hey, it's me. Oh, I feel so pretty. I got all this makeup on. I feel like I'm on a swan or something. I'm going to get me a husband tonight. And he was like, yes, you are. You are going to get you a husband. And he saw how to spell my name correctly off that show and went and, you know, typed it in the computer, but all he could find was my P.O. box. So then he calls his buddies that work at the cell phone companies. It's like, hey, do you know a Tiffany Haddish? Do you know a Tiffany Haddish? And they found my number, and he called me, and I remembered who he was immediately. And I was like, dang, how did you find me? And he tells me how he found me. And then, you know, I'm like, well, if you could find me, maybe you could find my daddy. And he was like, oh, I could find your daddy, but it's going to cost you. And I'm like, I'll pay you whatever you want. And so I'm thinking I'm going to just do it to him. But no, he's like, yeah, I want you to marry me. And I started laughing like, okay, yeah, sure, I'll marry you, whatever. Because I know you ain't going to find my daddy because I ain't been able to find him since I was 16. And 3 weeks later, my dad calls me, and I'm like, oh, my goodness. I can't honor this. I'm not going to honor this. And, you know, we start talking on the phone like every day. I'll go to New Orleans to shoot this movie. He drives out to New Orleans like 3 weekends in a row. He's a perfect gentleman. I start thinking he might be gay, you know, because he's not trying to get none. And then he flies me to his house in Savannah. I see how beautiful his house is, and I'm like, that's it. I'm taking him down. You know what I'm saying? You ain't going to be able to get away this time. And then from that moment on, I knew that, oh, this is going to be my husband right here. And he took me to see my dad, and everything was wonderful. He's a wonderful man. I love him.
So even though it starts off with a little bit of stalking, you ended up marrying the guy.
Yeah, I ended up marrying the guy. See, it's funny because before he even called me, I was like, I broke up with this other guy I was dating, and I prayed to God that the next guy that comes in my life, make him be somebody who wants to love me and care about me and wants to marry me. You know, don't just be messing with me just because I'm cute. Be messing with me because you have the intentions of spending the rest of your life with me. And that's exactly what God sent me. Exactly.
Well, congratulations on your life. Congratulations on your career. And thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me here. This is beautiful.
That's our chat backstage with comic Tiffany Haddish, who is part of the Nasty Show at Montreal's Just for Laughs Festival. You can learn more about the festival by going to their website at hahaha.com. You can learn more about Tiffany by going to her website at tiffnicity.com. And you can go to my website, which is thestufffile.com. Stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. Just go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0047, and you'll find links to both of those sites that I just mentioned. That would be Just for Laughs and also Tiffany Haddish's site. There you go. You're listening to The Stuff File with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
What are they saying about If the Rains Don't Cleanse? New York Times bestselling author David Mixner says, as a writer and advocate for Africa, I could not put down Ben Patrick Johnson's If the Rains Don't Cleanse. Aubrey Hooks, the U.S. ambassador to Ivory Coast, says, fascinating and hard to put down. If the Rains Don't Cleanse is CNN breaking news disguised as historical fiction. If people can't put it down, then why haven't you picked it up? If the Rains Don't Cleanse, the tale of missionaries in 1950s Belgian Congo is loosely based on my own parents' lives. It's available online, including Amazon.com and Amazon.ca. I, Ben Patrick Johnson, want you to read this book. My mother, Abidale Johnson, wants you to read this book. Now remember, this is a woman who survived as a missionary in Congo half a century ago. She is tough. Now do not make me send her your way. If the Rains Don't Cleanse, get it now, or deal with my mother. You're listening to the Stuff File program. It's the choice of 4 out of 5 dentists.
The fifth dentist also listens, but that's just because he follows the crowd. Here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come in the program, we will meet the creator of NeighborGoods.net. Plus, we'll have another visit from Peter Franklin to Gabby Cabby from Big Apple, New York City. And, of course, an idiot of the day. But right now, more stuff right here. And the question begs to be asked, just how low can human beings go? This might be a new low. 31-year-old Michelle Marie Van Ripper was arrested in Alberta Lea, Minnesota, for forging checks. Wait, gets much worse. The checks she was forging came from a checkbook she found, and that belonged to Garland Graves, who died last March. Ah, still worse. The checks had been at the home of Mr. Graves' daughter before it was leveled June 17th by that horrible wave of tornadoes that hit the area. Van Ripper allegedly went pilfering through the damaged homes, found the checkbook, and started writing away. She was arrested Saturday after police were alerted that she was reportedly attempting to pass a forged check at Hy-Vee Gas in the name of Garland Graves. She now faces a maximum penalty of 5 years in prison and a $10,000 fine for the single count. Sadly, the police have had to warn other tornado victims who lost personal papers, credit cards, debit cards, checkbooks, and other financial data in the June 17th tornado outbreak to make sure that the accounts they have are shut down. The tornadoes not only damaged properties, but they spread a lot of personal information over a large area. And talk about a catfight. This is almost a literal catfight, kinda. In Newport Richey, Florida, an argument over prescription drugs turned ugly and, well, just plain crappy. Cat crappy, to be exact. Enraged that her roommate, Rachel Switzer, had refused to give her roxycodone pills, 23-year-old Christian Styler banged on the front door of their shared home and broke through the door of their bedroom where Switzer was hiding. Styler then allegedly picked up a cat litter box and attacked. By the time the fight was over, Switzer was sprawled on the bed with cat feces on her face, hair, and ears, and cat litter coating her hair. Switzer told police she had blacked out after being slapped and choked. The ladies, and I use that term lightly, have lived together for 6 months. Police arrested Styler and charged her with domestic battery by strangulation, but more charges may follow. Meow. In East Bremerton, Washington, a 67-year-old woman allegedly took a full pot of coffee from the common area of her apartment complex and was headed to her room to enjoy the pot all to herself when she was confronted by a 61-year-old woman who lives in the same complex. The 61-year-old gently reminded the older woman that tenants aren't allowed to take items from the common area. That's when things got a little, percolated. When the 61-year-old tried to take the pot back, the suspect poured the hot coffee on her and hit her in the head several times, according to witnesses. The 61-year-old was treated by medics for an injury to her hand, which had turned red, puffy, and burned. The 67-year-old was arrested and taken to the Kitsap County Jail for assault. Gee, maybe the 67-year-old should try decaf. I'm just saying. In Colorado Springs, 47-year-old Greg Hartman was just trying to buy some shampoo at a local store when a stranger pulled a 3-inch knife with the intent to rob him. Turns out Hartman is a second-degree universal Kempo karate black belt, and as he put it, his instincts took over. He grabbed the guy's wrist, hit him in the face with what is known as a palm strike, and when the man wouldn't drop the knife, Hartman pulled harder until the man's wrist popped, either broken or dislocated. Hartman says, "He finally dropped the knife and I kicked it behind me, but then he started to come at me again, so I hit him with another palm strike, and from the sound of it, I'm pretty sure I broke his nose." That's when the guy finally gave up and stumbled away. Hartman didn't try to stop him. Instead, he just bought his shampoo and went home. I'm going to wash that margarite out of my hair. I'm going to wash that. Sorry, got carried away there. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News with me, Peter Anthony Holder, before we get to our next guest, in Franklin, Florida, police arrested what they thought was a 14-year-old boy after he talked a 16-year-old girl into running away with him. They stayed at a hotel together for 3 days until the girl ran away. Then police caught up with the boy, who turned out to be a 31-year-old woman named Patricia Dye. She was charged with unlawful sexual conduct with and corruption of a minor. So how did this 30-something woman pull this off? Well, police say Dye stands at just 4 foot 11 inches tall, is smaller than the 5 foot 5 victim, and indeed looks just like a teenage boy. Sergeant Bob Marchini said they were boyfriend-girlfriend. She looks like a boy. Police also believe the girl victim had no idea Dye was a woman. Dye, who lives with her parents at a hotel in Franklin, has no local criminal record, but police are investigating whether there are other victims out there somewhere. Yikes. Can't we all just get along? Can't we all just be more neighborly? Yes. Speaking of neighborly, that's a segue to our next guest. Borrowing a cup of sugar from a friendly neighbor has now entered the digital age. Neighborgoods.net is a handy website in the United States that allows people to post what goods they can loan out. So if someone down the street is in dire need of a power drill, they can simply message their neighbor to borrow it. On the line with us right now is the creator of the site, Mickey Kimmel. Hi, Mickey. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for being on the program with us. This is a great idea on so many levels. I understand you have a mission statement. You have basically three missions as to why you created this.
Yeah, that's right. So our goal is to help people save money, help people live more sustainably, and then also to strengthen local communities.
One of the things I noticed on your website, there's a little, advertisement or commercial at the top, and it says a very interesting point. Why does everybody in the neighborhood need to have a lawnmower?
Exactly. That's sort of how I came up with the idea. A couple of years ago, I was getting ready to go to Thailand, and I needed a travel backpack, and I couldn't find one to borrow on such short notice, so I ended up buying one for about $200, and I knew I was only going to use it once. I realized that was true for a lot of stuff I own, that I ended up, you know, spending a lot of money on something that I really only needed access to for a limited amount of time. So I did some research and found out I am not alone in that. Americans actually spend $22 billion a year on self-storage space. So Neighbor Goods is, you know, meant to solve that problem. It's a way for us to get more use out of the stuff we own and help everyone, you know, save a little bit of cash.
Now, on the other side of that coin, we are going through, at least in North America, and globally for that matter, a rough economic patch. And one of the things that the economy wants us to do, both in Canada and the United States, is spend more money. You're actually advocating saving money, which is a good thing, but is it coming at a good time?
Well, I think it's coming at a good time for consumers. You know, I mean, people are totally cash-strapped, and I think, you know, the buy message of our economy is sort of what helped get us into this mess. I think in the long run, solutions like Neighbor Goods can help contribute to a more sustainable, you know, idea of what the future economy looks like. It is, you know, it's definitely antithetical to the message we're hearing, but I think it's something that people are really craving for.
Now, one of the other things you mentioned as far as your mission is concerned is basically creating closer relationships between neighbors. Now, I understand you're from the Los Angeles area. Is that correct?
That's right.
One of the problems neighborhoods have these days, as opposed to 30, 40, 50 years ago, our neighbors don't really know each other. Do you think this is one of the ways of bridging the gap?
I do. I hope so. And I've definitely seen that in my own neighborhood. So we launched Neighbor Goods in Los Angeles in October. So we've been testing it for quite some time just in my community before opening it. You know, we launched nationally last week. But we learned a lot in that test period, and a lot of, you know, our focus is definitely on getting people to engage and meet each other, and it's totally working. I mean, I personally am much more engaged in my neighborhood now through Neighbor Goods. I've met 4 people that live in my neighborhood on the site that I now hang out with on a regular basis. I've gotten more engaged with some of my friends are involved in the neighborhood council, and I'm more engaged with that group now. It definitely works. There's something about, sharing with people near you that connects you to the place. I think that's what we're missing these days is the sort of, you know, neighborhood feeling where you feel, you know, ownership over your neighborhood. And we're trying to get that back. And part of that is the, you know, the buy economy. You know, we purchase all these items and then build fences around our houses to protect those items from other people. And Neighbor Goods is meant just to sort of help lower their fences a little bit.
Now, it's an opportunity for people to borrow, but also people can rent or even buy stuff from each other. Is that correct?
That's true. So the site, we support primarily borrowing and lending because we found during our test that that's what people are using it for most. For additional security, you can ask a neighbor to provide a deposit or a rental fee, if you're sharing with someone you don't know. We're finding because the wish list feature is so valuable for people. So if you can't find what you're looking for in your neighborhood, you can add it to your wish list. And what that does is it alerts everyone near you that you're looking for this item. And the wish list is driving all sorts of transactions, borrows, selling, giving away. So we wanted to make sure that people could interact with stuff any way they want.
So exactly how does one use the site? People go to neighborgoods.net and then what?
Well, we'll guide you through. It's very simple. There's two ways in. You can either start adding items or you can start looking for items near you. And it's all based on your location. So you can search 1 mile radius, 5 miles, 10 miles, 50 miles, or anywhere. So you can just browse really easily. We have a bunch of recommended items you can add with just one click, really common items like ladders and power drills, just to show you how the site works and get you to start adding things. And then when you sign up, you can also add your Facebook and Twitter accounts. That way you're automatically connected with your friends. So you don't have to go through the hassle of, emailing everyone and inviting everyone individually.
Okay. Now, since the site has been up since October, you say, how many members do you have?
Well, in October, we launched sort of a private testing site just in Los Angeles. So that was, a smaller group of people. But since we launched last week, we've doubled our membership. We have definitely thousands of people using it now, which is pretty exciting, and tons of items coming in and lots of transactions happening. It's been a really exciting week.
Okay, so you've branched out. You're beyond Los Angeles now. As I mentioned to you, we're talking to you from Canada, and we do have a large listening audience in the United States, but are there plans to expand beyond the United States?
We'd certainly love to. I mean, that's our most common feedback is, we want it too, and we think that's great. So, we sort of want to nail it here first and, figure out what people need. We're using U.S. zip codes for now, and there's obviously different legal requirements in different countries. So we're focused here now, and we're a really small team. So we're going to try and get the U.S. going. And then, we'd love to be everywhere. It just depends on how quickly we can grow.
You say you're a really small team. How many are you?
Well, it's me, and then I have a developer, obviously. We work with a freelance designer, and we have an intern, and that's it.
I take it this is not a full-time business, so what is your day job?
Oh, it's a full-time business for me. Absolutely.
Oh, it is?
This is my day job.
What were you doing before?
So I come from a background of online community building. I've been doing this kind of thing for a long time. Most recently, I worked as the community director at Rever.com, which was a video startup. That was a few years ago. I've done lots of consulting in online community. I do a lot of speaking on the topic. I sort of cut my teeth working for Participant Productions, which is the film company that did An Inconvenient Truth and Syriana. It's a film company with a mission to affect social change. And I led their interactive effort there, which was great because I got to do the social media campaign for An Inconvenient Truth. And that got me really involved with the green community and, the sustainability people. And that's sort of what spawned Neighbor Goods, is my connection with that movement.
Well, since you are so socially active, have you gotten the word out about your website, neighborgoods.net, to either civic leaders or politicians in various areas? Because you think this is something that they might want to jump on the bandwagon on.
Yeah, we're definitely working on that. I mean, again, as I said, we're a super small team, but we're looking, now that we've launched, our focus is really moving toward getting groups and organizations on board, and definitely political groups are part of that process.
Now, what safeguards or limitations do you have with the site? Because I would assume that some people, you might get some, the average thing like a power drill or a lawnmower, but you might get some weird items people might want to trade or borrow.
Yeah, I mean, you know, our basically don't allow anything illegal, obviously, on the site. But, I mean, NeighborGoods is built completely to be a safe community. Like, that's our foremost goal. So, you know, we're sort of building on the success of sites like Craigslist and Recycle, eBay. Those sites are awesome for getting rid of stuff you don't want anymore. They solve that problem really well. When you want your item back, now you have a whole other set of, you know, social requirements that come into play. And so that's what NeighborGoods is trying to solve. And we do that, you know, first and foremost by being a social site. So when you add something to NeighborGoods, you have the ability to say, you know, if it's something of high value or, you know, something you feel really connected to, you can say, you know what, only my friends can borrow this item. So you can, you know, define who has access to each item as you add it to your inventory. And then, you know, again, if you want a little bit of additional security, you can ask for a deposit or a rental fee. So, I mean, our whole mission is to give people the information they need to share safely and confidently.
It's an excellent new idea. Again, the website is neighborgoods.net. That's neighborgoods.net. I thank you very much, Mickey, for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thank you. I really appreciate your interest and support. You know, we're counting on our community to help get the word out. So I really appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Mickey Kimmel, the creator of neighborgoods.net. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for this show, which is number 0047. And you'll find links to their site.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments. From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Now, the Stuff File presents the Gabby Cabby, direct from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge in the city that never sleeps, New York. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And yes, once again, we do indeed have Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby from New York City. Always a pleasure to have him on the program. Nice to speak to you again, sir.
Yes, indeed. Live from the very hot and sweaty streets of New York.
It's hot and sweaty up here in Canada, too. Trust me. One of the things I wanted to talk about was some of the strange things with creatures going on in your neck of the woods. I understand the U.S. Coast Guard is warning boaters in the Northeast about sharks?
Yeah, well, they have. And interesting enough, I guess they figured it was time to ruin this business at the beaches, you know, sort of like from Jaws, and get everybody really scared, because I don't know that it's necessarily true. But anyway, they said it. And by coincidence, the next day, some guy caught a shark off the coast of Long Island, put it into his boat, thinking it was dead, but it wasn't. Took a big bite out of him. And so now everybody's really scared. But you might say, why would anybody in New York City care about sharks? And I shall tell you why. We have the East River, the Harlem River, and the Hudson River. But they're not rivers. They're not fresh water. They're actually what's called estuaries. They are part of the ocean. So from time to time, we do get the occasional shark comes to visit us, and we've even gotten the occasional small whale, which, of course, is very shocking because people don't think of New York having that type of a thing within the city, so to speak. So generally speaking, and this is a travel advisory, it's safe to boat in our waters. It's safe to fish in our waters. They're remarkably clean. But you got to be a little careful about swimming in them. I mean, just think about this. Let's say you're at 125th Street and Lenox Avenue. You've just gone to the Lenox Lounge to listen to some wonderful jazz. Then you decide to go over to the Hudson River and go for a little dip, and you're promptly eaten by a shark. That's quite a day.
Quite a day indeed. Now, as if it weren't bad enough that you're not safe in the waters around New York because of sharks, I understand there's coyotes in the suburbs?
Yeah, for years and years and years, and even when we were raising our own kids. Hey, the city is no place to raise your kids. Take your kids out to the suburbs where they'll have a backyard and everything will be nice. How can you raise your kids in the city? Well, it all turned out to be a bunch of nonsense because, as a matter of fact, crime rate is higher in the suburbs. taxes are higher in the suburbs. There's all kinds of problems in the suburbs. And their latest problem in Westchester County, which is just north of New York City, is that in the last couple of weeks, there's been two attacks, which had nothing to do with each other, by two different coyotes attacking little kids in their own backyards. Now, luckily, neither kid was seriously, you know, injured and really ripped up. But as far as parents who were saying it's not a good idea to raise your kids in the city, I have a feeling a lot of the parents are keeping their kids indoors.
Mm. Meanwhile, onto other news in the New York area, I understand there was a thief who actually stole from NYPD headquarters?
It's an absolutely insane story. First of all, to get into the police headquarters of New York City is just about impossible because of the security. So this guy gets into the building, which is amazing. Then he takes the elevator up to the floor on which the commissioner has his office. He proceeds to go into an adjoining room, and he steals three laptops, which is amazing. Now he goes downstairs out of the building. He's sitting on a park bench in the park that's just outside police headquarters. Now, keep in mind, nobody knows anything is missing from police headquarters. A cop notices him sitting on a park bench with three laptops, so he's a little bit curious. He goes over, and then he very quickly was able to figure out, because of markings, that they had been taken from police headquarters and that they had been taken from the commissioner's floor. And still, at that point, nobody in the building itself knew about it. So I have a feeling there's going to be some changes in the security at the police headquarters.
Meanwhile, I'm sure one of the things many people are talking about, maybe even in the back of your cab, is the new gig that your former governor, Elliot Spitzer, now has with CNN.
Well, I'm in the taxi business, so I don't have to be insulted because, as far as I'm concerned, he's just a jerk. I think you should be insulted that some guy like that is hired by CNN, given $400,000 because he's a tramp. That's all it is. It's absolutely outrageous.
So you're not fond of the idea?
No, because he robbed money from me. And the way he robbed money from me was, instead of doing the governor's job as he was supposed to do, he was going out to prostitutes, and he was riding around in state cars with state troopers and all of that. So when he gives me back the money he owes me, I might forgive him, but I'll certainly never forgive CNN. Well, I don't like CNN to start off with anyway, but, I mean, why would they give a bum like that a job?
Well, maybe now that he's getting that $400,000 a year salary, he'll be able to pay you fine folks of New York back.
Well, I hope so. Maybe that's a good idea. I'll call them up later today and said you said it.
In the meantime, speaking of your cab, do you ever get an opportunity to eavesdrop to the conversations that are going on or even participate?
What are you, a wise guy? That's all I do. I mean, it's the whole reason for driving a taxi on the streets of New York, listening in on everybody's conversation. And I like to think that because I'm a real New York guy, born and raised here, lived here, and all that, that I can kind of understand the humor on the streets of New York better than anybody. So, oh, that's the most fun. I love it, I love it, I love it. And you know what happens? You start work at, let's say, 5 p.m., you got the dinner crowd, then you got a little bit later the theater crowd, then you start to get the weirdos in the wee hours of the morning. So it's a constant cornucopia of different people to eavesdrop on.
Well, define some of the weirdos. What are the weird things that happen in the back of your cab?
Well, number one is that they don't realize that you're listening. And also, since a great percentage of the cab drivers today are recent immigrants, they figure you don't understand English. So, you know, that gives me an advantage. But, I mean, you know, I've had situations where you have two girls that were sitting in the back of the cab and they're having this whole discussion as to whether or not they should have sex with their boyfriends. And they got into pretty, you know, pretty minute detail about it. And, I mean, it was going pretty hot and heavy with doing this and doing that and blah, blah, blah. And, of course, I'm listening to everything. Now, when I got them to their destination, I said, which I think was one of the funniest lines in the world, but it flew right over their heads, I said, whew, do either one of you have a cigarette?
That is one of the funniest lines in the world. Have you?
Yeah, but they didn't appreciate it.
Have you ever participated? Have you ever interjected in a conversation that you were eavesdropping on in the backseat of your car?
All the time, because remember, I'm a parent. I'm the father of two boys and one girl, so I will always mingle. And if I'm taking a guy and a girl someplace in the cab, and the guy has been giving her, I guess I can best put this, as a lot of crap, and I think he's a loser. I will, as a father, not so much as a taxi driver, turn to the kid and say, get rid of the guy, he's a loser.
Ooh, okay. Now, what about interesting individuals, prominent individuals? I understand you had Henry Kissinger in the back of your cab, but you mistook him for someone else at first?
No. I didn't mistake him for anything. I wanted Henry, see how I call him Henry, to always remember me for the rest of his life.
Right.
So what I did was when he got into the taxi, the first thing I heard was, this is a very clean taxi. So I thought it was maybe like Arnold Schwarzenegger. And, of course, I turned around, and there was Kissinger. And, you know, when you see these guys like 6 inches away from your face, I mean, it's just, it's flabbergasting. So I figured, hey, I'm going to have some fun. So I said, you know, you look very familiar to me. And he says, yes. I said, didn't you used to play for the Boston Red Sox? He says, no. I said, didn't you go to Notre Dame? No. And I keep asking these stupid questions all the way across Manhattan. And you know that any minute he's going to probably hit me on the back of the head and start screaming, Schweinwind, don't you know who I am? I'm Henry Kissinger. Well, anyway, if Henry's listening right now, Henry, I know who you were. I know who you were.
Now, what did you say to Mia Farrow in your cab?
Well, when she got into the taxi, which, by the way, I was very much taken aback because I always thought she was a mousy little ugly thing. And she isn't. She's a very attractive woman. So I said, where's Woody? And I really didn't mean to say it. And she came back very quickly and said, I don't know. Let me see. No, I guess he's not here, is he? Well, I really lucked out on that because she could have gotten very angry.
Absolutely.
And I try not to do that type of stuff, but it just popped out of me. The devil made me do it.
In addition to driving your regular cab, you also do tours. People can find that information by going to your website, which is www.gabby.com. That's G-A-B-B-Y.com. You give tours of New York, and people could also email you. The email address is peter@gabby.com. Thank you once again, sir.
Wait, I have to add one thing.
Please.
I want to explain to your worldwide audience why LeBron James didn't come to New York City.
And that would
be? Because the New York Times today neglected to explain that to everybody. There is only one reason he didn't come to New York. New York has taxes. Florida does not.
Aha. See, you can always...
That trend was started by a fellow named Rush Limbaugh, who moved out of the state to Florida, and when he did that, our governor, which shows you what kind of a jerk he is, said, gee, if I knew he was going to leave, I would have raised the taxes earlier. So I guess he's going to say the same thing about LeBron James. Oh, then maybe I should have raised the taxes so he definitely wouldn't have stayed here.
You can always get the true dirt behind the story when you talk to Peter Frank and the Gabby Cabby. I thank you, sir, for being on the program with us once again.
Thank you.
This is The Stuff File.
And we're almost done with this edition of The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. But before we go, you know what happens at this point of the program. Yes, it's time for an idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the idiot of the day.
Well, it looks like we may have found the world's worst drug smuggler down in Bradenton, Florida. That would be 33-year-old prison inmate Jason Graham, who was being booked into the Manatee County Jail for violating his supervised release on a DUI charge. Graham was changing into his blue jail uniform when a supervising deputy said he heard a rubber band snap as Graham pulled up his pants. Then a package of blue prescription pills with a rubber band attached to it fell out of his pants. Apparently, Mr. Graham had secured the package to his own package, if you know what I mean, with a rubber band, and it popped while changing his pants. Now he'll enjoy additional charges of drug trafficking and introduction of contraband into a correctional facility. Oh, snap! Why would someone try to smuggle something into jail by putting an elastic band around their own private parts? One reason and one reason only, He's an idiot.
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, number 0047. The website is thestufffile.com, and stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's thestufffile.com, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the What's On page. Just look for the corresponding program number, which is 0047. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com, and you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/PA Holder and Twitter at twitter.com/PA Holder. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, VIPInternetRadio.com, KDXRadio.com, and streaming on PCJMedia.com, plus over the air at World FM 88.2 in New Zealand, and also on Gold FM 90.5 in Singapore. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. I'm your announcer, your name here. Oh, I'm sorry. This is Ben Patrick Johnson. What am I being paid for this? What? You're flipping kidding me. Okay, that's it. Turn off the microphone.